And Thorsten will be talking about the perturbation in higher dimensions and its applications to advanced optical.
First of all, I would like to thank Justin for inviting me here and giving me the opportunity to talk here. As he already said, my main topic today will be the perturbation theory, cosmological perturbation theory in higher dimensions. I will try to exemplify its usefulness at the case study in string gas cosmology. Now, my main goal is to argue that cosmological perturbations are a very useful tool that lets you connect theoretical models with observations. And one example is string gas cosmology, but the usefulness goes much more beyond that. So it's only one specific example to show. Keep in mind, it's much more general what I will be talking about. Now the outline is as follows. First, I'm going to try to motivate why should we look at cosmological perturbations. Since not everyone in the audience has a background in cosmology or astrophysics, I'm going to start by the most recent observations and tell you what they are. Thereafter, we're going to have a quick look at theoretical models and then ask the question, how can we connect theory and observations? And I will argue in favor of cosmological perturbations. I know there are, of course, other means of connecting theory with observations. Thereafter, we're going to go ahead and lay out the formalism of perturbations in higher dimensions. But I first have to give an argument why should we look at extra dimensions. After all, we only look in three large dimensions. We don't see extra dimensions on an everyday basis. So we'll lay out the formalism, and I will make it very specific, a 5D setup. 5D because it's the most simplest case that I can think of that shows one extra dimension. Of course, one can generalize that to even higher dimensional setups. Having this formalism at hand, we go ahead to a specific example, which is string gas cosmology. This is a very modest approach of including certain elements of string theory into a cosmological set. And in the last 2 years, it made really good advancements in this within this framework. And I think, I personally think it's a very interesting framework that should be studied a lot more. And that's the reason why I chose it. And I will end by an outlook on other promising models of the early universe that are also in need of verification and validification. And this will be rather biased by the thing that I'm working at right now. Okay, so let's go ahead and have a look at observations. And I bet most of you have seen this picture. This is the cosmic microwave background radiation as seen by WMAP, and this is basically a snapshot of the universe for 300,000 years after the Big Bang. At this point, the universe became transparent for photons, and any over and under densities show up in the CMB as hotspots and not so hotspots. So the average temperature is about 2.7 Kelvin, and you see the fluctuations around that are a few hundred millikelvins. So it's very homogeneous. And that's actually the reason why we can do perturbation theory to first order. I will come to that later on again. Now what you do with this beautiful picture, this is a picture of the whole sky. You can also think of this as the perturbation from a globe. First thing you do is you decompose that to a complete set of functions in the sphere that is spherical harmonics, and then you can write down the power spectrum. This is basically the amplitudes in front of your spherical harmonics over the multiple moments. And then you do that with this picture. So the dots are the measurements from WMAP, and solid line is a bit, which has about 5 free parameters, include the parameter space, a few other ones make a better fit. But I won't talk about how you do the actual fit here. Simply take it that my observational friends, they can do that. They give me a certain set of parameters that they get out of that. And look at through the papers, you see a whole list of parameters that they fit so that they can match the data. I would like to draw your attention to one specific parameter, that is the scalar spectral index. There are other ones that are equally interesting, but I will only focus on one of them. The scalar index basically describes how much power you have in each node. Now the observations tell us that it is nearly scalar invariant spectrum, meaning you have an equal amount of power in each node, and this would correspond to the scalar spectral index of 1. It is close to 1 from the observations and could even be consistent with 1.
So
this
value is obtained by combining?
This is a combined study of all CMB data plus SDS data and other studies. So this is the best value I could find right now in the archive. This number always changes. If you look in a few months again, the error bars might go a little smaller again. So it's roughly 1, a little bit smaller than 1 actually. Now what we have to do is, of course, to give an explanation for that. So far we have parameterized our knowledge of theory universe, but giving parameters doesn't mean we understand theory universe. In order to understand theory universe, we have to be able to write down a model that predicts those parameters.
So,
sure.
So for this index, how robust is the statement that it's less than 1? I don't that much care
well,
about this value. Is it less than 1 or more than 1?
Those error bars, I think, are 1 sigma error bars. So plus minus 0.2. If you only look at the cosmic microwave vacuum radiation, it's actually slightly above 1. And at the moment, I wouldn't put that much emphasis on that it is less than 1. Maybe wait till the Planck satellite gets online and does another measurement, and then the error bars will shrink even more, and we will know for sure if it's less than 1 or 4. For the moment, keep in mind, roughly 1. That's all we need in the model.
It's important because if you look at different cosmological models, you can exclude some of them.
Exactly. This is, I will make a point of that, that we can actually predict what it is exactly. Is it less than 1? Is it bigger than 1? Is it exactly 1? And this will be, we will be able to discriminate between models. But right now, the observations don't let us do that.
Okay.
In a few years, we will be able to do that. So let's have a look. What does this fitting of parameters actually mean? If you write this scalar spectral index over here, you see how the power spectrum changes. You basically tilt the whole thing. And this lets you also see how robust this number is. When you only look at the CMB data, you see, well, 1 fits, but slightly around 1, this is all fine. 0.5 is excluded, 1.5 is also clearly excluded. So this should only give you a rough idea of what observation this is, what they do in order to fit those parameters.
So you fit by normalizing the second peak. The second peak is?
Well, it's a multi-parameter fit. There are 6 input parameters, and they provide all of those simultaneously together.
But you need a normalization, right, of your CMB spectrum when you do this.
Sure.
So it looks like that the second peak you keep.
Yeah. There's no long normalization.
Well, why did you choose the second peak and not the first one?
I haven't done the fit, so
okay.
I'm no expert in actually doing these kinds of fitting methods, but I don't think that, well, this is what we think about. Now let's go to theory when I'm a little bit more at home. What is the general procedure when you would like to write down the theory of the model for your universe? First of all, you have to pick a fundamental theory that describes physics at fundamental level. Right now, string theory or loop quantum gravity come to mind. Pick whatever you like. Next step would be to simplify theory a lot, because you will not be successful in writing down a model when you take the whole theory. It's simply too difficult. First approximation one usually does is you make use of the homogeneity and isotropy of the Earth universe. This gets rid of all spatial dependence. And then you make a few other simplifying assumptions, maybe keeping only certain ingredients of your fundamental theory. And in the end, you end up with a model. A few examples from the last years would be the ekpyrotic or cyclic scenario. The idea is to use string theory as a fundamental theory, We have the Morava Witten set up where six dimensions are stabilized. One additional dimension is free to evolve. You put it on an orbit fold. You have two orbital fixed planes. They hang close to each other. They hit. They bounce back. And each bounce would be like a Big Bang. This is the basic idea of the hyperbolic cyclic scenario. And it is based on the Big Bang. I won't go into any details for that, but it's a model that was proposed about 5 years ago based on string theory. Loop quantum cosmology is an example that's based on loop quantum gravity. There, the idea is that you first take a Hamiltonian, you impose some constraints at the level of the Hamiltonian before you quantize it. Then you quantize it, and you get an effective Friedmann Horizon Walker description of the universe, and then you do cosmology. The downside of that procedure is, of course, that first simplifying and then quantizing is not the same as first quantizing and then simplifying. So there are some arguments that at the fundamental level this is a good approach, but you can take this as a model and try to actually verify or validify this model. If your model is not consistent with observation anyway, then you don't have to bother at all. So I will take a rather pragmatic approach and say, tell you, well, give me a model. I'm going to try to check if this is consistent with my data or if it's not consistent. If it's not, forget about your model. It's not true. Other models, KKLT, is not so much cosmology, but more or less a derivation of an input of potential, in my biased opinion. String gas cosmology, on the other hand, is more cosmological in the sense that you keep the extra dimensions dynamic. Take the full space that you have in string theory, six or seven extra dimensions, and you put string matter sources in this universe, you let it evolve, and you see what happens. That's the approach of string gas cosmology. Yes?
In which sense KKLT is less cosmological than string?
Well,
I mean, there you also have extra dimensions. You have
I agree.
Extended source of brains. You have flux.
That's right. But you fix your extra dimensions. You don't keep them dynamical.
Well, if I study fluctuations, there will be fluctuating fields which come up.
I agree. But you're only talking about dynamics at the perturbative level. In other models, you keep the extra dimensions dynamical even at the background level. So if I think about cosmology, I think about the whole universe, let it evolve, and not keep something fixed right from the beginning. If you want to see stabilization, it should be a dynamical stabilization. Of course, it is a bias. I'm no expert on KKLT, but the way I perceive this is that they do their calculations in order to get down to a fully effective theory with an inflaton field and a very specific potential that is derived from string theory. It's a great achievement. And maybe it's true. But the difference between this approach, say string gas cosmology, would be that the x dimensions at string gas cosmology are kept dynamical, even at the background level.
Are you going to say that in string gas cosmology there is no effective description, effective four dimensional description?
Yes, you can write down such descriptions,
but
you cannot always do that. And in fact, in string gas cosmology, you can do that. The thing that I will talk about string gas cosmology more later on. So let me continue here and come back to you. So these should only be a few examples. What the question that arises immediately is which one should be believed in, or as a physicist, I don't like to believe in anything. I would like to know if this is true or not, or if it's consistent with my data or not. So I said the task to myself, let's look at those models, take them as they are, and look what they predict, then measure that, or compare that with measurements. So we have to connect to observations, and let's argue, I would like to argue that cosmological perturbations are a good tool that you make this connection. First of all, you might think, well, why can you do perturbation theory? Why is this enough? It is enough because the universe was highly homogeneous early on. You could see this at the picture of Dalvik. The fluctuations were 1 in 10 to the 5. Now, if you go even earlier, the fluctuations were even lesser because gravity is attractive. So if you go forward in time, fluctuations, they grow, they build structure, they lead to us in the end. But early on, it was even more homogeneous. And that's the reason why first order perturbation theory is most of the time enough. Now, what's the procedure for cosmological perturbations? It's actually quite simple. You pick a model, be it whatever you like, and then you identify the degrees of freedom that are in the model. So if you are string theory, you have X dimensions, you have frames, you have metal sources in the bulk or on the frame, you identify those things. Thereafter, you perturb whatever you have. You write the equations of motions, you simplify them, you specify initial conditions, and then you actually have to solve those things. It's not enough to write down all of that, you have to solve it. And this is, in my opinion, the challenge when you do a computation. It's not so much writing down all these equations, but it's to find solutions. And I will show you why this is very challenging when you, as soon as you add X dimensions. In the end, you compute observables. Now, a specific example that most of you who've done some cosmology will be familiar with is inflation. So the model would be slow roll inflation, four-dimensional universe plus a scalar field, some potential. The degrees of freedom are the metric degrees of freedom, the Bernoulli potential. Think of the Bernoulli potential as the gravitational potential. It's basically what it is. And you have the inflaton field perturbation. Now, the equations of motion would be the Einstein equation, the Gordon equation. You perturb those. And then you can actually see that those 2 degrees of freedom, the Bernoulli potential and the inflaton field perturbation, are related. So there's only 1 degree of freedom. You can write this in the end as one scalar field obeying a Planck-Gordon equation. This is really easy to solve. You can specify initial conditions, put the Davis vacuum, for example. You can choose whatever vacuum you like. The answer, the result doesn't depend on that. And you can compute the spectral index. This is a computation you can do on the back of a paper. It's not that challenging. And what you end up with is, for example, the scalar spectral index. Now it is defined to be the Bernoulli potential squared. First of all, you do a Fourier decomposition of the Bernoulli potential. You square this guy, you multiply it with the wave number k to the 3, and you see how does this thing depend on k. If it does not depend on k, you can say it's a scalar invariant spectrum. If it depends on k, you write the exponent as the scalar spectral index minus 1. So here you can see an s equals 1 corresponds to a scalar invariant spectrum. The prediction of inflation is a scalar spectral index close to 1. It is, in fact, given by the slow roll parameters. So it's like less. Well, these parameters are. Now, let's have a look at something more difficult. Let's look at theory that includes X dimensions. And the motivation is clearly in string theory or M theory, you have 6 or 7 X dimensions. And if you would like to write down some cosmological model, we better write down a model that takes into account those X dimensions. So in any model that's based on string theory, it's intrinsically higher dimensional. And if you talk about predictions, you should also consider what's the effect of these new degrees of freedom that come in when you have x dimensions. So we need the cosmological models with x dimensions. And as a consequence, we have new degrees of freedom that you have to perturb. For example, in the cyclic scenario, the degree of freedom, the traditional, would be the distance between the 2 brains. And in the following, I sometimes call this distance between the 2 brains, or the X dimension, I will call this a radial. Only a name.
So what is the inflaton? I thought that that's what you would naturally identify with the inflaton. So why is that?
Yeah.
Gets an extra.
The problem in the cyclic scenario is the fact that you cannot grasp the full physics and the Pauli effect theory. I will come to that.
Okay, I'm asking
it will act as an inflaton. So if you only have one extra degree, one extra dimension, you get one additional extra degree of freedom. And if you have nothing else, you can tell, well, okay, that's my inflaton. But now you have a fundamental understanding of what your inflaton is. This is the size of the extra dimension in this case.
If you have two external dimensions as well, you also have shape modulus. You get more of those. It becomes more and more complicated.
Now, very soon I will argue that 4D effective theory is not sufficient for the cyclic scenario. We'll first see why. Now, the formalism is once again very simple. You perturb all the degrees of freedom, that is metric degrees of freedom. You have the beam potentials, you get radions and off-diagonal degrees of freedom in the metric. Any extra fields you might have, the Dilaton flux, take into consideration and perturb. Also, if you have brains or matter sources, perturb also those guys. And the question that you might have right now, well, this is all perturbation theory, first order. This should be pretty trivial and easy. After all, you have linear equations. No matter how many there are, you can solve them quite easily. Well, this is true to some extent. It is pretty straightforward to set out to perturb everything and to write down the equations of motion. What is challenging is to identify what are the crucial degrees of freedom, because if you start out with six x dimensions, there's a whole bunch of those, and you will never keep track of all, so you neglect terms to simply pass them. This is a non-trivial thing. Next non-trivial thing is to actually solve all those equations that you get, and there are also open subtleties involved. For example, cyclic scenario. There, the first computation of the scalar index was done in 2001 at the level of the 4D effective theory. Now, over the next 3 years, there was a fierce debate about what should be the correct procedure, because there were difficulties. The specific difficulties in the cyclic scenario were that the brains bounce, and this collision was actually singular. So they had to rely on matching conditions. Then you had to argue which matching conditions, because your answer depends on what kind of matching conditions do you choose. Furthermore, it became evident that you cannot grasp the full dynamics in 4D. Because you have brains in the setup, your SRL junction conditions give you a dependence on the scale factors on the x dimension. And as soon as you have that, your Einstein equations complicate. I will show you how they do that. The bottom line that I learned from the cyclic scenario was that one has to be very careful with 4D effective theories, and often one misses things if one stays at the effective field theory level. Sometimes it's consistent to do the computation very carefully in 4D, sometimes it is insufficient. Specifically, if you have a dependence of any of your fields on the bulk order, you should be very suspicious with any arguments made in 4D. So let's get a few formulas here. Now, this is the metric, and we have three scalar factors here, N, A, B. A is the scalar factor of three large dimensions, B is the scalar factor of the X dimensions, and I'll only talk about one X dimensions to keep things simple, to show you how little the idea is here. I could make a gauge transformation so that N is equal to A, but I kept it general as A. What you have to do is to perturb the metric. You identify what are the degrees of freedom. I focus on scalar degrees of freedom here. You could do the same analysis for vector models or for tensor models. Now, your degrees of freedom are the two beam potentials. You have perturbation of the scalar factor of the x dimension, which I will call the perturbation of the radion of the following. You also have an off-diagonal component of your metric. This perturbed metric is already gauge fixed. This means you took care that you don't pick up gauge degrees of freedom. If you write down the most general perturbed metric, you have two additional degrees of freedom, but you can transform them away by means of the gauge connection. So this is actually called the generalized conditional gauge. Now, those perturbations, they can depend on time, space, and the x dimension. So this is the most general thing you can write down in 5D. Now, what you have to do if you want to derive the equations of motion is you can compute the Einstein tensor. This is pretty straightforward. Maybe 20 years ago, it was challenging. Nowadays, you put it into MATLAB and it gives you the Einstein tensor. Now the first component looks actually pretty easy, and it's an orthogonal component that gives you a relation between the diagonal components of your perturbed metric. Now, generally, if you don't have anisotropic stress, the right-hand side of this Einstein equation would be zero, so you could eliminate 1 degree of freedom, which is nice. So if it would continue like this, it would be a piece of paper to solve the problem. However, the other equations don't look that nice. Specifically, in these equations, you see whenever you have a prime, this is the derivative with respect to the coordinate of the x dimension. A dot denotes the derivative with respect to cosine time. And you see it soon, as long as you have a dependence on the x dimensions, all those equations will couple with each other. Specifically, the off-diagonal perturbation W will enter and will influence the other ones. And it would be very challenging to solve this kind of thing. Now, if you don't have a dependence on the x dimensions, these guys simplify a lot. And this will be the case that we'll be discussing in string gas cosmology. Question.
What do you mean by solved? That's just an Einstein tantrum, right?
The right hand side, well, the next thing you have to do is you do the same for the energy momentum tensor and you perturb it. But in order to do that, I have to actually specify the form. Yeah. This left hand side is pretty generic. The right hand side is very model specific. So I'm only going to show you the right hand side. In the specific case of string gas cosmology, but we do not have a dependence on the x dimension. And for that reason, the equations are feasible and we can actually solve them.
So you picked some, you wrote these in longitudinal?
This is a generalized longitudinal gauge. You could also write this down in terms of gauge invariant quantities, and the advantage of the generalized longitudinal gauge is the equations look the same. So I could also write down these components with gauge invariant variables. But let's say it's gauge fixed. There's no gauge invariant freedom here. Okay, so let's have a look. What is string gas cosmology? Because now I would like to have a look at the right-hand side of the Einstein equations and the energy momentum. I think Robert Brandenburg has given quite a few talks here about string gas cosmology, so I will be rather brief that. There will be another talk tomorrow, I think, by Ali Nagieri, also based on string gas cosmology, so you will learn a lot more about string gas cosmology tomorrow. So here's the bare bones of what it is. You would like to do cosmology and string theory together. Now, cosmology means you have the time-dependent background. And if you're a string theorist and you hear the words time-dependent backgrounds in string theory, you get a headache because that's not trivial. So this is an active field of research, and the reason we can get away with doing time-dependent backgrounds and also with string theory is we are holding an adiabatic condition. This basically means that strings don't feel the expansion of the universe. Loosely speaking, let's say if I gain size of my waist, it's not because the universe is expanding, it's because I eat a lot of food. So equally well, strings don't feel the expansion of the universe. This is the fundamental assumption that we're going to make here. This is on the cosmology side. Now, how do we incorporate string theory? Well, we're going to have a look what are the new degrees of freedom in string theory. Brains and strings come to mind immediately. And in order to incorporate them in this cosmological setup, we're going to impose a gas approximation. So we have an effective energy momentum tensor that averages over your string or brain sources that you have to derive an effective energy momentum tensor. And you go with this effective energy momentum tensor into gravity, into GR or Dillerton gravity. I will not talk about the Dillerton today. Be aware that the Dillerton, it can be viewed as the scale factor of an x dimension. So you could also, you have to do everything with the Dillerton. I keep the Dillerton based on the question. Yeah. Okay. Now, what are the crucial assumptions we have to make in this framework? One assumption I already mentioned is the adiabaticity. The universe is evolving slowly enough. And this is basically so that we can do string theory on this time evolving background. Another assumption that is imposed on us by consistency from string theory is homogeneity of all fields in the x dimensions. If we don't assume that, we might run into regions where the curvature becomes so large that we lose control over the computations. So this is a consistency assumption that we are making here. And basically, it's, we don't know what we're doing if we include dependence on the x dimensions.
So
on this board.
It includes the climb modes, right? So why do you say we don't know? Just expand and couple, there will be just x.
Well, you would like to do physics that say near the self-dual radius. And if you have a dependence of the scale vector on the bound coordinate near the self-dual radius, you will immediately use hypervision approach. And we don't want to include those.
Why you have a circle? A circle is a flat. So
yes.
Flat. So
well,
why do you get the high curvature? And if you
are talk about toroidal dimensions, I will focus also on toroidal dimensions in this talk, but the setup has been extended to collabials and to more complicated topologies. And there is really an issue. So simply if you don't buy it right now, so you see it as a simplifying assumption. It simplifies of course a lot. But it is also imposed on
its own. It's not about the zero mode doesn't make any sense. It's not about approximation.
Say
if you mean the circle already, keeping only the zero mode in the circle is not just a matter.
Why not?
Well, you have to roll it down a string shifting.
Sure. Well, what we will argue for us is to argue when we're keeping only the 9 degrees of freedom. We do not want to include the whole power.
There is no separation. There is no separation.
Yes.
There is no good separation at the self-dual radius between what you call light and what you call time.
Yes. The what I will argue about in the following is that we start off, let's say, away from the self-dual radius. And let's say you come close by it. You should include other degrees of freedom that become light at this state. You have a better concern if you ask what about all the other states that we should consider there. And we neglect them. It's a valid concern. And if you would like to read a review that keeps track of all those downfalls of string gas cosmology, I suggest you have a look at the review of myself and Scott Watson, where we did exactly that. We pointed out all the not so nice things in string gas cosmology and all the concerns you're raising. But for the moment, simply go with me and take it as maybe as a simplified setup. And there are concerns about what about higher or more massive states, but take it as a model, take it as a pragmatic approach. Okay, I already mentioned toroidal x dimensions. This is for simplicity. You can extend this to more complicated topologies.
I'm sorry, can I just ask maybe,
yes.
It's a little bit more surprising because since you keep saying the word self-dual radius, so
mm-hmm.
presumably you will also include the winding modes of the string.
Yes.
And that's you include in a sense the mode which has a mass as opposed to the fine mode. So
the states we're going to include in a second will be states that become massless at the self-dual radius. So this is a combination of winding and momentum modes.
Mm-hmm.
You could also argue in favor of keep fluxes around. You don't have to talk about winding and momentum modes at all.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm saying is we would like to stay at the low energy and we only include the light modes, but we would like to include all of them. And bear with me, I come to this in a second. So what can we do? This is the commercial question. If I would give a talk only about string gas cosmology, I would follow up with all the not nice things in string gas cosmology. But for the moment, only the nice things. Tomorrow, we can ask Alan Nigeria about the downsides of string gas cosmology. So we can actually generate a scale invariant spectrum. You can do this by either incorporating inflation within the setup. This would be of the type of anisotropic inflation where three dimensions grow large, the internal dimensions, they shrink down.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, the internal dimensions come to a radius where new degrees of freedom become light. And you include them in your theory, you get moduli tracking. This is the idea of incorporating inflation. You can also generate a spectrum by means of Hargadon phase in string gas cosmology. This is a recent proposal by Jerry Brunkberg and Fraha, and you will hear talk focusing on this mechanism tomorrow. You can stabilize axiom dimensions dynamically. This is the idea that of moduli tracking near points of enhanced symmetry. If you are at a point where you have new space that become light, they will trap you at this point. You can have candidates for dark matter, which is nice to have. Original friends, they tell me there's lots of dark matter around. And you can possibly explain the late time acceleration of the universe without a cosmological constant. There you make use of the dynamical character of the X dimensions. You can mimic a cosmological constant for a period of time by letting the X dimensions evolve. This would be work by Sixi Ren and collaborators. It's a very recent proposal. It needs to be checked more properly. Now, the only thing I will need in the following is the idea that we would like to incorporate inflation and we stabilize near the cell through the radius. Yeah. Specifically, what I would like to look at is the stabilization period. I ask the question, does the scale invariant index, does the spectrum get altered by the stabilizing of the X dimension? So I take for granted that we have some type of anisotropic inflation. We stabilize the X dimensions at the string scale, cell dual radius, and this will be the background solution that I'm going to take. And around this background solution, I'm going to curve, and I'm going to discuss, does the solutions that we get from the perturbative level, do they show instabilities, meaning does the spectrum that we generate during inflation before get changed by the stabilizing epoch? So this is the question. Of course, you would have to address this question in general with 6 or 7x dimensions. Be extremely tedious to do, so let's take a toy model where we only keep 1x dimension. So if you're going to write down the Einstein equations, the left-hand side will be given by the Einstein tensor you have seen a few slides before, but there will not be any y difference. This makes it feasible and solvable. So a few words about the background solution might be needed. The mechanism is moduli tracking, which was proposed by Silberstein, Hoffman, collaborators, and beauty is attractive. It was even earlier proposed by Superpatil, actually, in a paper that was most written about. The main idea is that you get additional light degrees of freedom at certain points in moduli space. And let's say if you combine one of those points, you produce those states. It's really similar to reheating up the inflation. It's the same math. And once you have produced them, those states back react onto your background in such a way as to trap you near the modules, near the point where you produce those states. And as a consequence, the modulus gets trapped. On the specific setup of string gas cosmology, the point of enhanced symmetry would be the cell dual radius. There you produce new states, and they trap the scale factor B at the set of the radius. And you can write down the equations of motion. This is a combination of the Einstein equations. This twiddle means that I rescale the scale factor such that B equals 1 corresponds to the set of the radius. Eta is conformal time. A prime denotes the derivative with respect to conformal time. And this is a combination of energy and pressure of your string gas. I will show you where this comes from in a second. But you can now either stare at this for a while and see that it stabilizes here, E equals 1, or I can show you the picture. Indeed, you get oscillations in the cell field radius and it gets stabilized, as you would expect when you look at the potential of one. Now, what's actually more interesting is what are the string sources that give you the stabilization mechanism. The responsible strain gas looks like this. So here, this is the energy density. This is the pressure along the three dimensions. This is the pressure along the x dimension. Mu naught is the density of strings, a scale factor of string large dimensions, alpha prime string theory, b scale factor, and q is the parameter. And I would like to draw your attention on this peculiar combination of b under the square root. You basically get this if you write down the energy of a single string, and you have a mode that carries winding and momentum charge. And then you average over lots of those guys, and you get this energy density. Once you have this energy density, you can easily compute the pressures. So this is the string gas at the background level that gives me stabilization. And this will be my background model that I would like to scrutinize now. So what I have to do is I have to perturb this energy momentum tensor given by rho, p, and r. And I have to perturb the metric degrees of freedom in here. I also have to perturb the number density of strings here.
Why not b tilde? You're assuming that b tilde is homogeneous in space.
I will perturb that.
As an x dependent.
Okay. Yes. They will all depend, the perturbations will be, well, for A, this will be the Vadim potential. Mm-hmm. The perturbation of that will be the Vadim perturbation gamma. And we'll see it in the next slide, actually.
Question.
Yes.
I mean, a generic string theory doesn't, I guess the question is, what string theory are you in?
This is heterotic string theory. So okay. It depends on which string theory you choose. However, the mechanism is quite generic in that whatever string theory you choose, you will always have points on the string landscapes where new degrees of freedom become light.
But not in the back two lines, you will never get fundamental strings.
That's right.
But then
for there was a recent paper by Scott Watson and Sarah Kamonini where they actually looked at the 11B picture and they include correction of two membranes and they were able to actually stabilize the development. So this is a very generic feature that is not, I'm not claiming here that our universe has to be at the center of radius. This is a specific model. But the general idea is quite generic. How do the perturbations look like? You have already seen this metric, but now nothing depends on the x dimension. So this will simplify the left hand side of the Einstein equations considerably. And you see you have now the perturbation of the scale factor E.
Yes, so that's a crucial point. So before you showed us the equation for the extra dimension, right? Mm-hmm. And it was depending, it can fluctuate, right? It can depend on y.
Yes.
So why are you assuming now when there will be a fluctuation there that the radius will be fixed? I mean, there will be no fluctuations. You know, they are in the, like, increasing mode, the size of the circle changes.
Well, the size can change. What I'm assuming is that the scale factor does not, or this perturbation does not depend on the bulk orbit. You see, I do have a perturbation on the radium. So the radium can have a different value here than over here. Mm-hmm. But what I will assume is that this is the same when you're anywhere on the circle of the x dimension. And you can see this as a simplifying assumption, but it's actually a little bit deeper because if you wouldn't do that, you would run into consistency problems with our approach.
But you said that, so you can always make this assumption, so this is like a consistent, I guess you are trying to claim that this is a consistent truncation.
Yeah.
They are Einstein.
Exactly. And I would actually say if you don't do that, you would do something inconsistent. You would run into problems with the general framework.
So the curvatures will get flat. Yeah. I don't see how here you can ever get flat curvatures if you have a single circle. And you argued, and I agree, you know, if you buy the argument that you have this stress energy tensor, it appears that the circle is stabilized itself to all radius. I see no reason how you can generate like large curvatures there.
I will maybe discuss it.
Sure.
It's a little bit different. And I urge you to have a look at the video that I want this one once in the whole chapter. Okay. Now, we have to perturb the meta sources. Now, what you also should keep around is this should be after you produced those states, Now, if you generated the spectrum before, which means you have inflation before, you also needed to reheat the universe. So we will also keep a radiation bath around, in addition to the string energy momentum tensor. The perturbation of the radiation bath is standard. I won't show you that. You can find it in any book. The only thing I'm going to show you is the perturbation of the stabilizing string gas. Of course, if you solve the equations of motion, you have to also have a power coming from radiation. What does it look like? Well, you have perturbation of the energy density, of the pressures, and some scalar velocity potential. It's the most general thing you can write down. Without anisotropic stress, I would like to draw attention to this point. We don't have optimal terms in here, which will simplify stuff. One can actually give some arguments why this should not arise in this ring gas being considered.
Sorry,
yes.
So, in the background stabilization you're talking about,
yes.
I mean, the stabilizing agents, well, they have some density and pressure, that's the key to the story, but
this would
that's
be rho P and R.
Yeah, and but that's redshifting, say, like later on in the history of the universe.
Yes.
So it redshifts as the expansion of the universe, so.
It redshifts basically as radiation. And you have to check if this stabilizing mechanism is consistent with having a universe that is stabilized today. We did those checks and it is consistent. Do that if you assume reasonable densities at this point. You can still stabilize reasonably well today. What saves the day physically is that those string sources, they basically move with the velocity of light. So if you have that enough string sources oversweep your universe, your Hubble radius, in a Hubble time, and this condition is satisfied. So yes, this is a valid concern, and you have to check that this is consistent with baseline.
I just wanted to ask you, your answer is so today,
it could be stabilized by this thing, yes.
And have a sufficient value.
Yes, you check that. Otherwise, I wouldn't be talking about this one. Now, I've shown you rho, P, and R before, so you can now write down the general perturbation of that, and it will include metric degrees of freedom. This is gamma, this is the perturbation of the radium. Psi is the combination of the two Berdin potentials. And we already made use of this octahedral Einstein equation to pick out 1 degree of freedom. So this was a reason why I showed you the specific component of the Einstein tensor, which would couple to anisotropic stress, which we don't have in the setup. So this saves the day also. And M is a perturbation related to the number density of the string gas. I'm sure you haven't memorized rho, P, and R. So these guys you have supposed to plug into here, here, and here. The left-hand side where we have these equations would be the Einstein tensor. Right-hand side is given by that. What you have to do now is to solve those metric Einstein equations. I won't drag you through this because all time is already progressing close to lunch. Let me only emphasize the general features of the solution. This is now actually a challenging problem. You can do it numerically, you can do it approximately. Yes?
Could you please go one
minute
back? Sure. Those things that you wrote, pressure, density, and what will they be functions of y?
They are not functions of y.
So what's b tilde?
B tilde is the scale factor of the x definition. It only depends on t.
It only depends on t. So
it
you
only depends on t. These are the background energy density and pressures. They only depend on time.
So everything depends. But
I mean, this is understandable at the background. We're doing cosmology of homogeneous isotropic universe.
How then you give the self to a radius? It's a radius. That's a radius of the circle. We're saying it depends on time. I thought that it depends, you wrote the equation as a function of y.
Nothing depends on the coordinate of the bath. This is the main assumption right here. How b depends on time, show you.
Maybe you can remind me.
Yeah. This is how the scale factor b depends on time. So it oscillates around the set of the radius. And the question I'm examining this right now, what is does this Yes. High dependence, do the perturbative levels in my perturbation. Yes. The concern I have that something similar to bouncing universe, if you follow the literature on bouncing universe where universe undergoes a bounce, strings and goes back again. This bounce of, at the background level generically has a spectrum altering effect. So the concern we had here is even if we are able to get a scale covariance spectrum before, the stabilization mechanism might screw up the spectrum. So we wanted to make sure that this does not happen. Otherwise, we'll have to forget about it. Yes?
So is it clear that anisotropics first plays no role at any stage of the evolution?
I would say no. It is a simplifying assumption, but one can also give some arguments why it should not arise within the framework. But these arguments are not at the level of fields. Again. This was the vector energy momentum tensor to solve it. And what are the features of the solution? First of all, let's say if you generate scale invariant spectrum in the radion, this radion perturbation will talk to the other metric degrees of freedom and quickly get them up. And thereafter, you will only have transient oscillations. So the point is you can seed the scale invariant spectrum in the Bardeen potential by means of bulk perturbation. That's possible. But what's more important is, let's say, you generate the scale invariant spectrum for the Bardeen potential itself. The dependence of time on the B, this, you can see this at the Bardeen potential, it will source oscillations in the Bardeen potential, but these are very small in amplitude and they're damped quickly away. The point being is, yes, you have some effect, there are transient oscillations, they're damped away, so in the end, long wavelengths mode that are outside of the horizon, you can treat them as being frozen. The naive intuition that you might have from a four-dimensional universe where a mode gets frozen once it crosses the horizon, this naive intuition works here too. In the end, so the spectrum is unchanged. The radion perturbation only has decaying modes, which is expected because we stabilize the radion itself, so one wouldn't really expect growing modes of the radion perturbations, but it's a consistency check. The perturbation and the density of the string gas, this gets sourced by the metric degrees of freedom, but it doesn't talk back. Basically, the equations of motion for the metric degrees of freedom, they decouple from the perturbation and the number density. So this is the reason why you could actually recapture the correct physics at the 4D vector theory. And the reason why you can do this, you don't have a bulk dependence, and like the degrees of freedom you would naively include basically the radion perturbation, this would have been enough. You could have forgotten about the perturbation permanency of the string. However, my personal bias is that the 5D picture is actually clearer. You can actually see what's happening. In the 4D effective theory, you have a bunch of scalars floating around, and it's not so easy to see what's going on there at the fundamental level. So I think it's actually easier to do the computation through 5D. And also, in general, you have to be careful when you do a 4D theory that you don't throw away your isocurvature modes immediately. A few words about isocurvature modes. It's a simple toy model. You have two scalar fields. You have one fluctuations along the trajectory of your field space. So say you have two fields, you get a trajectory in time. If you perturb along this trajectory, this will be the adiabatic mode. But you also have perturbation perpendicular to this trajectory, which does not correspond to a shift in time. These are the isocurvature modes. They generally appear if you have more degrees of freedom. You get those more degrees of freedom if you have expectations, and it's not clear that they are not growing. Now, isocurvature modes are not observed, so if you do a 4D theory, you better check that you don't generate lots of isocurvature modes that will be in prediction and observation. This is only a warning. If you want to stay at 4D, be careful about those guys. So what's the punchline? I hope to make an argument why perturbation theory is a useful tool in order to connect observations with kind of models. And specifically, if you build your model with string theory in mind, you always have to think about what's happening with those extra dimensions. And the proper tool that you have to use at the perturbative level would be perturbation theory in higher dimensions. Well, I hope you've also seen that even though in principle trivial, it can be quite challenging to actually solve those guys. And that's the reason why there are not that many studies around that do perturbations at the higher dimensional level. Simple reason being, it's darn difficult to solve those equations. Now I would like to comment a little bit on recent models that have been proposed that are in need of verification. And this would be rather biased, and these are the models that I personally am very enthusiastic about if I plan looking on them. Of course, I have lots of other ones. One proposal is by Carp and Randall. The idea is that you have a large universe occupied by the 7 brains and the 3 brains. And what can happen is when you have 7 brains, they can intersect, and you can localize gravity on this intersection. Now, if you intersect 3D7 brains in a 9-dimensional universe, you get generically a 3-dimensional space. So we could live on an intersection of 3D7 brains. Now, Carr and Randall gave a few arguments why those intersections should be prevalent, why they should be important, why those other brains should not be around. However, this is only a proposal, and what needs to be done here is to actually work this into a model, try to extract some observations from that. I'm looking at this right now together with Claudia Levan, who is an expert in brain works. She gave a talk yesterday, so I already know that. And I think it's a really promising proposal because you could potentially explain the dimensionality of space-time. I didn't mention this before, but in Swinger's cosmology, one of the first ideas was to give an explanation for the dimensionality of space-time. Now, recently, we've seen that this argument, due to Fraunhofer and Wachter, 20 years old, doesn't really work that well. This is the work of the Columbia group from Frank Green that studied this in detail. So we don't have a good explanation for the dimensionality of space-time. This could potentially be one. Therefore, I think it's interesting. Another model that you have already seen a little bit today is the incorporation of inflation within string gas cosmology. This is recent work by a student of Robert, Natalia Shoemaker, from Frankfurt himself. They found specific realization of how to incorporate this type of anisotropic inflation within the framework of string gas cosmology. And naturally, one can now go ahead and compute scalar index, the running of the scalar index, the amplitude, tensor modes, one can compute the amplitude of tensor modes, all kinds of stuff. This is what I'm doing right now together with Natalia. And last but not least, I would like to draw your attention to the recent proposal by Tangeri, Randberg, and Vapa. They gave an argument how to get a scaling variance spectrum of fluctuations during the Hadron phase without invoking inflation. And the physics that's responsible for that is thermodynamics of strings, basically. What this could potentially give you is an alternative to the inflationary paradigm, which would be very interesting, because so far I'm not aware of any consistent model that theory of the universe that lives without inflation. So you might either say, well, the universe really inflated, and this is the way it is. But if you have an alternative to that, you would have to question this approach that you always start with inflation a little bit more deeply. So I think it's a very promising proposal, and Alina Jerry told you to talk about this mechanism tomorrow. And I strongly urge you to go to this talk. It's a really interesting model. They're working right now on getting also the running of the spectral index, they compute the tensor modes, that they get a scaling variance spectrum from that. This work is super until, and I'm also involved with this work. That's about it. Of course, there are many other models that one can test, and I've only shown you one specific model. Bottom line is, whatever model you have, you should try to make contact with observation. Because if you don't, you're not doing physics, you're doing philosophy. You're only doing physics if you actually look at the observations and if you try to either kill your model or to keep your model alive by seeing, well, this is consistent with observations. So, if you have any great questions, happy to answer them. The talk is also online in case you would like to look at a few references that were scattered throughout the talk. So, thank you, and feel free to ask questions.
Yes. In just this assumption that your perturbations are not dependent on your bio coordinate.
Yes.
This has to do, does it have to do with neglecting also the anisotropic stress?
It's related, yes.
Yeah, it's related, of course. And you say the argument for neglecting anisotropic stress is consistent without making this assumption or consistent within this assumption?
Within this assumption. Oh, then what I'm saying here, this is a consistent truncation of the theory. So we can consistently do some string theory in a cosmological setting. It's a modest approach. We're not claiming that we include all the corrections for string theory. We keep a little bit, but that's more than most models actually do.
Your statements were surprising in this context when you said that when you do include the y dependence, you get some singularities.
I wouldn't say singularities, but I would say at some point you will lose control over the computation.
Well,
or let's say, I don't know, yeah. I'm not sure about
that. I can believe
I have that strong concerns about that.
But the consistency is simply that you, for example, as pointed out, you have to include just more general perturbations and anisotropic
yes.
stresses. Then you restore, you know,
yep.
the consistency of Einstein. It's a different question than the system
I agree.
Will get non-tractable. But
yeah, maybe I was a little bit too harsh on that.
Okay.
It's really I wanted to make sure that what I'm doing here is consistent. And I don't want to show you some esoteric model where we're not sure about the internal consistency of the framework. What I've shown you, I'm 100% sure of the internal consistency. Other questions? Okay, if you have questions later on, I will be in room 255 the whole day, so feel free to come.
Thank you.